Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hey, welcome listeners to another fantastic episode of Negotiations Ninja. We've got my new friend Alex Carter on the show. She is a professor at Columbia Law School and a litigator extraordinaire. She's just written a fantastic new book. I think you're going to love it. I am really looking forward to reading it. This conversation was amazing. It's always fantastic to get someone who's seen both sides, both the academic and the real world situations where negotiation works and doesn't work. I am thrilled to have her on the show. You're going to love this conversation. Enjoy. Alex, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm splendid. Thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I think we're going to have a great time today. I love what you do, and I'm very excited about your new book. But before we get into that, can you tell the listeners who you are and what you do?
Sure, Mark. So I'm a professor at Columbia Law School, where I teach dispute resolution, negotiation, and mediation. I've been there since 2008, so 12 years now. And in addition to that, I'm a negotiation trainer for a lot of large companies, for the United Nations, and also for governments and public interest organizations all over the world.
Fantastic. Before we get into the conversation around Ask for More, I want to just talk about maybe the difference between negotiations that you see at a public level and in the UN versus negotiations that we would maybe see on a day-to-day basis in business or something like that. Do you see major differences between the two?
Yeah, you know, I see some differences. You know, I think, Mark, that I've often said that human beings on a base level, you know, most want the same things, whether I'm talking to my 9-year-old daughter, my husband over, you know, who's getting the home office this week, or, you know, a prospective client or business partner. I will say that negotiations in the public sphere have a few differences that I think your, you know, your listeners would pick up on. One, usually those are large multi-party negotiations, and those come with a whole other host of procedural and substantive issues. You know, I think that the second thing about those negotiations on the, you know, on the transnational level is you really have to think about the audience or the audiences that each person is playing to. You know, every person at that table, and it could be a very large table, is a representative for a lot of different groups. And all of those groups are like invisible parties to your negotiation. So very often, if you can't understand how a particular person is behaving in negotiation, I like to think about what audiences that person has. And oftentimes that gives me a clue as to what I might be seeing.
I love that, because one of the things that you talk about is shifting the conversation, shifting the negotiation from like the desired outcome to the core problem. What do you mean by that?
I think a lot of times, and if I could speak to this current moment, especially in a time of crisis, I think sometimes we approach our negotiations in the wrong place. We kind of immediately jump to potential solutions. We're trying to throw a bunch of stuff at the wall to see what sticks, or we take the opposite approach. We just sort of dig our head in the sand and pray for things to pass over. I found that the first critical step that a lot of people skip in negotiation is figuring out what problem to solve. That's a lot of the key of negotiation success and even innovation success in companies. And so if I were counseling somebody, especially during coronavirus, how to approach a negotiation, I would say sit down first and think about the problem you're trying to solve, and then think about the problem they're trying to solve. Even something where people might approach it with trepidation. You know, if you have a business owner who needs to approach a, you know, a commercial landlord, for example, might be a situation where, you know, the tenant thinks, oh my goodness, I'm at a disadvantage. I'm having cash flow problems, for example. First step is to think, okay, so what exactly are you going in to do? Are you going in to figure out how to get a rent reduction for 3 months while you pivot your business? Are you trying to figure out how to extend the life of the lease? Figuring out what you want to solve, and then figuring out what problems they need to solve. Because even landlords, you know, ostensibly in the power position, don't have quite as many options as they used to. The courts are clogged even on a good day. And right now they're closed. They will be closed for months, perhaps. And even when they resume, there will be, as somebody who works in the courts, let me tell you, there will be a tremendous backlog. Plus, sticking with this, you know, landlord-tenant example, a landlord has his own set of issues to deal with. He may have to show his own lenders consistent cash flow or consistent occupancy rates. And so I find that when you start with the problem, both from your end and from their end, that's your strategy, and then all of your tactics flow from that.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. I think so often we go into these kinds of situations kind of shooting from the hip. And we think we're going in for one thing, and then we negotiate something, we come out with an outcome that we think we're happy with on the surface. And then after thinking about it for a while, we're like, that's not really what I wanted. That doesn't actually solve my problem at all. And one of the things that I see a lot that you speak about a lot as well is this discomfort with silence. And people, for whatever reason, have a very, very uncomfortable relationship with silence. How powerful is silence, and why do you believe that silence is so important?
You know, Mark, I've just seen it work over and over again, right? Haven't you? I think, you know, the first time you do it, right? And let me back up for a second. I want to give your listeners three words. And these are three words that I give to all negotiators I counsel. And those three words are land the plane. Sometimes the silence is proportionate to how good a question you just asked. And the moments when I ask a great question, there is silence on the other end. Why? Because I've asked an open, thought-provoking question that is really compelling the person on the other side of the table to participate in the search for a solution. And that often takes time. You know, I can recall one case. I was mediating in New York courts, and it was a business partnership that also turned into a personal partnership. And then everything fell apart, and these two parties ended up in court. They were about to go before the judge for a trial, and the judge turned to me and said, I'm going to give you 1 hour to have them try to work this out. We got in the room together, and I said, all right, tell me which brought you here. And both parties started weeping. And I looked and assessed the situation, and within about 5 seconds, I thought, okay, these folks are basically here because they know they're not going before the judge to adjudicate the end of this business and personal relationship. They're grieving the end of this. I'm going to give them the space. I gave them close to 45 minutes. Periodically, I'd ask a question. They would lapse back into silence and crying. And as I predicted, 45 minutes in, one picked her head up, looked at the person across the table and said, all right, let's settle this. Here's my offer. Sometimes people need silence really to contemplate what they want to do about a situation. And Mark, may I say, I also used silence in more adversarial situations. So prior to becoming a dispute resolution professor at Columbia, I was a litigator at a very large New York City law firm. And as a junior associate, I deposed a couple members of the former Enron board of directors. And I found that even when I was in an adversarial situation, I would ask open-ended questions, and people would inevitably over-answer with things their lawyer didn't want them to say. And then after they finished answering, I would pause. And I really paused, like for 10 seconds. And it was shocking to me how many times even these really seasoned business people would fill in that silence with something they had been thinking, but maybe were trying not to say. In the end, I think silence really invites people to talk. And so I've found, you know, sometimes, frankly, the more I shut up in negotiation or even at home with my family, the more I learn and the better negotiations I have.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. A couple of things there that you said that I find super interesting. At the beginning of the conversation around silence, you said silence is more effective and you see it more often when you ask a question that creates that silence. One of my very good friends, Dan Oblinger, has a saying, ask questions that deserve a response. And I think that's sort of on the same vein that you're talking about. The other thing that you said there is when you create that silence, you give people an opportunity to think. And then think about what they wanted to say, and then they actually say those things. Often I find that people who are trying to implement silence, they don't give the other party the time to think to be able to create that response because of fear in some sort of circumstance. And two of the biggest emotions that I see in negotiation, I think you see as well, are fear and guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you see those emotions pop up in negotiations over and over again?
Oh, yeah, Mark. You know, in fact, I call those the big two because those are the two negotiations that I find blow up more negotiations than any other. A lot of us have sort of an uneasy relationship to conflict. And so when we get into a negotiation, we may start to feel those two emotions, but we don't want to express them. Instead, it comes out as anger. And may I say, especially during a crisis, and a lot of people I'm counseling report to me, and this is certainly borne out by the research, but in a crisis, all elements of our negotiation are affected. Our cognition is affected, our processing is affected, and our emotional reactivity and self-regulation are affected. Has anybody seen, you know, the fights on Facebook, or has anybody dealt with someone and felt like they had a really short fuse that day? There's a lot of anger, irritability, frustration, and it's because people are feeling fear and guilt. Fear, what's going to happen to my business? What's going to happen to my employees or my family or my health? Or guilt, you know, how could I not have gotten us in a better place to prepare? Could I be doing more now? And so what I like to do when I hear these emotions, right, is a couple of things. First, people are lapsing into those from a loss mind frame. When we are feeling fear and guilt, it's because we are thinking about what we're going to lose. And so the antidote for me when I see this coming from somebody else is to refocus them on what they have to gain. Right? To let them know that I'm here to help, that we're in partnership together, and to state my goals to make sure that everybody gains from the conversation. I also try to acknowledge, a lot of times you think negotiation is really more about scoring points than acknowledging people. I have found, and I'm going to bet you're the same way, that when I truthfully acknowledge people in negotiation, when I point out things that have gone well, efforts I see them making, contributions they've made to the agreement, it really induces a lot more positive behavior. So focusing people on what they have to gain and also acknowledgement are two of the most powerful tools I have in my negotiation arsenal to take down some of that emotion.
I love that. One of the big things that I teach in conflict resolution is thanking the other party for bringing up their objection or their idea. By doing so, you're acknowledging their idea. So many of us, I think, in any kind of conflict-based situation, try our best to shut the other party down almost immediately just to say, hey, we're right, your idea sucks, you know, blah, blah, blah. But by listening to it and acknowledge it and thanking them for their idea, what you're doing is, because they're putting themselves, I think, into a very vulnerable situation by sharing that with you. And by doing that, they're feeling defensive immediately. And when you put them in that state and you try and shut them down, you're just going to create more conflict. It's going to escalate the conflict. And so when you thank them for that and you acknowledge them for that, you're going to create a much more well-rounded discussion that you can actually come to a solution on.
Mark, that is so good. And if I could pick up on something you just said, you talked about, you know, when somebody raises an objection to you, I couldn't agree more. I think when somebody raises an objection to me in negotiation, this is a gift I've been handed. It means, number one, it's a sign of trust. You lost somebody when they're no longer bringing up their objections. And in fact, one of the things that I train people to ask about even are the objections that people have but aren't raising. I love to ask people what their concerns are in negotiation. And I have found that really hearing and honoring somebody's objections is my number one tool for turning a no into a yes. In fact, these days, one of my favorite things to work with is the no. I see it as information and really powerful information that I can use to help create a deal that's going to work for both people.
I love what you said there, to honor the objection. That's a quote right there. That's brilliant. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love that. Listen, as we're closing here, I would love for you to talk about your book for a little bit. Talk about Ask for More. Why create that? Why start this project and why now?
I wanted to expand the conversation about negotiation. A lot of people think it's just a back and forth over money, or it's something that only the most aggressive person in the room can do well. I wanted to let people know that whether you're a management consultant, a mechanic, or a mom, you too are a negotiator and you can feel confident doing it. And in the book, I have redefined even the concept of negotiation. To me, it's not just a back and forth over money. To me, negotiation is steering. I teach that it's any conversation in which you are steering a relationship, and that includes the relationship you have with yourself. The most powerful way to steer relationships is to ask questions. And so Ask for More is just that. It is 10 fantastic research-backed questions that you can use to negotiate anything. 5 of those questions are what I call the mirror section. They're questions you ask yourself. And Mark, it doesn't have to take a ton of time to do this. These mirror questions are questions that I try to ask myself every day. And in 20 minutes, I can go through all 5 questions and I have my strategy and my tactics and, frankly, more clarity and peace to tackle all of the problems that I'm going to face that day. So after you ask yourself those powerful questions, I give you 5 powerful questions to ask someone else. And that's what I call the window section. And these questions, again, have achieved incredible results from people in a variety of different professions. You know, in each chapter, I tell a story about a negotiation where that question transformed everything. So that's it. It's 10 questions, 5 you ask yourself, and 5 you ask somebody else. And I've really found that when we ask better questions, we get better answers and therefore better results.
Yeah, brilliant. Love it. That's fantastic. I'm really looking forward to reading it. Now, for the listeners, where can they find the book?
So I was going to say a bookshelf near you, Mark, but but unfortunately, you know, and just an aside for your listeners, last week I wrapped up recording the audiobook and I did it, Mark, from a closet in my home. because all the studios were shut down. And so we got to work here and built me a recording studio. So you can find Ask for More on any online retailer. So of course, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. There's a fantastic site that now is supporting independent bookstores. And so for those of you who have the means, I would love for you to go to one of the major retailers and buy a copy from a friend. You can find it at bookshop.org and also at IndieBound, which helps you find a local independent bookstore.
Brilliant. Love it. Is there anything that you'd like to leave the listeners with today, just as a word of wisdom or a skill that they can use to develop their negotiation skills?
I want people to know that I wrote Ask for More to be timeless. I wrote it to help you in any negotiation, anytime, anywhere. But even though it's timeless, it's also really timely. I, like you, have spent the last month trying to pivot and adapt and deal with the problems I can't solve, solving the ones I can. And these questions have really helped me. I know that they will help you to pivot the things that are in your control and cope with the things that are not. And my hope is that this book helps you ask for more of the things that make life worthwhile.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being on the show, Alex. I really, really appreciate it. I'm sure the listeners are really going to enjoy this conversation. This is fantastic.
Thanks so much, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.